Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So President Obama has authorized the deployment of hundreds of special forces soldiers to train, advise, and support the Iraqi army in response to ISIS's sweeping advances. The president promised the troops would not be involved in ground combat. So what exactly will they do? To help answer that question and to tell some of their own remarkable story, we have Jim Gant, a former Special Forces commander whose unconventional tactics successfully recruited thousands of local police in Iraq and Afghanistan, but ultimately cost him his career as a Green Beret, and Ann Scott Tyson, who started out as a reporter on the Washington Post Pentagon beat, but ended up a central character in the story she was writing and ended up marrying her subject. Anne is the author of American Spartan, The Promise, The Mission, and The Betrayal of Special Forces Major Jim Gant. Jim and Anne, thank you so much for giving us some time. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
Great to be here, Brian.
And Anne, let me give you the first word. What made Jim's mission in Iraq and Afghanistan so worthy and so controversial, in your own biased opinion?
Well, Jim was very influential in helping develop the concept of what they call village stability operations in Afghanistan. And that was rooted in his belief that working with the Afghan tribes to fight the Taliban was something that was really lacking in our strategy. It was a great gap. At the time, we did not have adequate foreign forces in Afghanistan or trained Afghan national security forces. And the insurgency there is very much rural. It's a Pashtun, ethnically Pashtun, rural insurgency. So his idea was that the traditional tribal social structure needed to be leveraged, as it always has, to fight off the insurgents, and that was his major theory, and what was seized upon by General Petraeus, Admiral Olson, then head of Special Operations Command, and others who saw that this had promise.
Because it's certainly, Jim, what Petraeus became famous for first. When he started to get all that good press relatively near the beginning of the Iraq War, it was for doing something that sounds just like what Anne just described, right? Developing relationships with the people in the cities or the villages that the U.S. military would take in Iraq. So were you and Petraeus colleagues, rivals? One was a disciple of the other. How would you describe it?
Well, first and foremost, General Petraeus was running the whole show over there. I mean, he was a commanding officer. I have always, executed the missions that my commanders gave me. He was a great commander, and he was pretty far up the chain. I had a couple guys between he and I.
Right.
And when the orders were given, and in Iraq, I had a purely kill and capture mission, and in Afghanistan, that mission changed. And I have an incredible amount of respect for General Petraeus. I did then, and I still do.
One of the problems in Iraq recently, at least as it's been reported, is troops in the Iraqi army giving up and not fighting ISIS. Can you tell us how you recruited troops to the military there, since I think that's part of your story?
It was quite a bit different in Iraq than it was Afghanistan. I was very involved in Afghanistan. In Iraq, I was the commander of a national police quick reaction force. I had a handful of Americans, and we had about 600 Iraqi commandos. And pretty much the national level national police would recruit who they wanted to be in these units, and then we would train and assist and advise and lead them in combat. I wasn't involved in the recruitment of local defense forces that was so successful in Anbar.
But with that experience, how do you see what's going on in Iraq today with forces refusing to fight?
Well, I think that it's a that is a very, very complex situation. I believe that I believe that we should have stayed a little bit more engaged, obviously at the tactical level anyway. And I think that's what we, you know, that's what we need to do now.
Is that obvious to you? Because certainly one of the political controversies has been whether the rise of ISIS could have been prevented by the U.S. keeping 5 or 10 or 20,000 advisory troops in Iraq after most U.S. forces left at the end of 2011, rather than them all coming out. How much do you think that's the case, especially if they were in non-combat roles?
Well, I think that we have a group, and it is the United States Army Special Forces, who it's our primary mission to lead and train these indigenous forces. I think that the Iraqi security forces had been given ample time to be prepared. At the same time, I think that that we it is obvious to me that we should have remained more engaged than we were. And it's one thing to advise from Baghdad. It's another thing to be on the ground with these units. And that's what we have special forces for. And I personally believe that we should have remained more engaged at the tactical level with the Iraqi forces for many, many reasons that I could go into. One of them is intelligence collection. I mean, I've read pretty much everything I get my hands on about it. I'm not there, but it appears that this caught us completely off guard.
And to the story that you tell in the book, what was the betrayal of Jim, part of the subtitle of your book, and why did he have to leave the military?
Well, the betrayal really speaks to what you and Jim were just discussing. It is essentially that when Jim was given the mission to rally the Pashtun tribes to the U.S. side, he did so with the belief that we would have an enduring commitment there as a nation, and particularly the special forces. It was known at some point the decision was made that the majority of conventional forces were to leave, although he was assured by commanders going in, and when he was he was forming alliances with the tribal leaders that special forces would be there indefinitely. He had in mind perhaps 5, 10, more years. Then there was a strategic decision made that we would be withdrawing. Now, it is possible that we will remain engaged in Afghanistan, but that is going to be dependent on the outcome of the Afghan elections. And, I mean, specifically, whoever becomes the new leader there, that may be decided today, that they will have to conclude an agreement with the United States for that to continue. And of course, we should not overlook in this case that the Iraqi and Afghan leaders have a say in whether our forces remain in that country. So it's not entirely on our shoulders, but in this type of a fight, you want to have an enduring presence.
And Maliki didn't want us there, apparently, at the end of 2011. And do you, as Pentagon reporter, believe the current Republican critique of Obama that he could have, if he really cared to, negotiated that status of forces agreement that would have provided the immunity from local prosecution, which American troops stationed anywhere else in the world have, which Maliki was unwilling to give American forces in Iraq. And that was the hang-up that led us to, instead of keeping a few thousand advisory troops there, to get them all out because they were seen as too vulnerable to local legal whims. Do you have a sense, any evidence from your reporting that Maliki really wanted all the American troops out? That was a political or military agenda for him, or that Obama was too easy to accept those terms?
I did not cover the blow-by-blow of those negotiations, but I did hear at the time from military contacts involved who felt that you are right, that an agreement could have been concluded. And the perspective I heard, again, from, you know, a limited number of sources, was that, you know, perhaps the administration did not want it badly enough, did not do things that they could have done, and sort of, you know, by default, it did not happen. Mm-hmm. That was a perspective that I was given, but I cannot say that I have a completely comprehensive view on that.
And, Jim, maybe people have too narrow a notion of what special forces are. I mean, they have the tough-as-nails reputation of doing the frontline, really dangerous counterterrorism work, like capturing Osama bin Laden. That was special forces, like Navy SEALs. So what exactly would special forces do in this advisory role the president now has them in? Do you understand the mission, and is that also something that special forces are actually trained for?
Well, that's a great question, and you know, when I say special forces, I'm particularly talking about the United States Army Special Forces, the Green Berets. When we're talking special operations forces, you know, that includes Joint Special Operations Command, the Navy SEALs, and things like that. Specifically, it is my understanding that they sent about 300 United States Army Special Forces over there who are. Our expertise lies in working with local governments, working with indigenous forces, and not being there on the ground. My estimation is that they are helping them with intelligence gathering, intelligence collection, targeting, and trying to get as much information as they can to give the higher command and our government great assessments, boots on the ground, on what is actually occurring there, because I have a lot of strong thoughts about that too. I don't think we need to overreact in this situation. I think that if we'll be patient and do some pinpoint operations, that ultimately in Iraq, the ISIS will fail.
And what's it like to be a journalist and fall in love with the guy you're supposed to be covering?
Well, I will point out that I did not start a relationship or have a relationship with Jim when I was a journalist. I had come into contact with him through journalism, but I was already on a non-military beat at the Post when we first met. Mm-hmm. And from that point of our relationship, I never wrote about him. In fact, I left the Washington Post in order to write a book, which is really different from traditional journalism. I think that a lot of people, you know, just see me as a Washington Post correspondent.
And forgive me, we have 15 seconds left, so...
And it's a work of narrative nonfiction, a military biography. The title is American Spartan, and I hope people enjoy it.
And Ann Scott Tyson is the author, and Jim Gant is both the subject and former Special Forces leader and Green Beret in Iraq. Thank you both for giving us some time today.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.